Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined for the fourth time by the one and only Eric Francis of Sportsnet, my fellow colleague. I read you a ton just because just because of how great a writer you are, and I always find that you make stories, kind of come out of their shells. But I don't think you needed to do that to begin the season. With all the craziness in Vancouver in that first game of the season, what was that like for you, just watching that game as a journalist and seeing all the ups and downs? How many times did you have to change your story?
Well, first of all, thanks for the kind words. You're too kind. And welcome to the Sportsnet team. You're doing a great job, my man. I'm proud of you. So good job. That game, I've covered the league now 28 years. I'm trying to think of a game that was wackier than that, more twists and turns and storylines. And yeah, as a columnist, the game ends. And, you just start from scratch. That's all you're doing. It was a 6-5 overtime win. The Connor Zary goal for the Calgary Flames. Of course, the game we're referencing for people is that, Flames open the season in Vancouver. They're down 4-1 in the first period. Looks like all the predictions at the preseason are, coming true way too quickly for fans. I don't really go on social media very often, but I happen to just go on after the first intermission. And oh my God, people were absolutely lighting up the Flames and saying, burn it down and trade this guy and all this. And I didn't go back and look, but I wonder if they were eating their words, later. Listen, it's one game and the Calgary Flames are still not going to make the playoffs, in my opinion, this year. But what an incredible comeback to win in Vancouver against a great team. I'm not sure where they built up the self-belief that they could do that, but it was pretty impressive, and it probably bodes well for the rest of the year.
You talk about the playoffs, and you wrote a story a couple days ago just about how Michael Backlund and some of the players from the 2015 team that weren't supposed to make the playoffs, bottom of the standings, a lot of parallels with this Flames team, and they felt that they do have that belief that they can make. What do you make of the maybe the comparisons of those two teams? And I know it's really early, well, really, really early, but is there a pathway in your mind for this team to make the playoffs, or is it just one fun game to begin the season and maybe we'll see a couple more L's in the win-loss column throughout the season.
Yeah, hey, anything's possible. Listen, the reason why I just don't think they're going to make the playoffs is because they're putting their fate in the hands of two young goalies who have never been starters in the National Hockey League. And that's the basis of it largely. It's a whole lot to ask of those guys. Look, they won 6-5, but Dan Vladar still gave up 5 goals. That won't do very often. I think they're both good young goalies, don't get me wrong, and I think their futures are both bright. But listen, that comparison Backlund made, he was on that team 10 years ago. Johnny Gaudreau was a rookie that year. Sean Monahan was in his second year. Sam Bennett was a rookie that year. But you didn't know what you had in those guys. And the Calgary Flames have Connor Zary, Martin Pospisil, both in their second year. And you think you have something special in both those guys, but you don't know. And then, who's going to be the next Johnny Gaudreau in this city? Well, I'm not sure there's ever going to be another guy quite like Johnny was, but can there be a guy who can, emerge as a superstar? Well, Flames have a guy named Sam Hanzsek who shocked everybody in camp and was their best player in camp and made the team kind of out of nowhere. I don't think he can do anything close to what Johnny Gaudreau did, but the bottom line is they got off to a good start 10 years ago and they just kept it going and it gave him a tremendous amount of confidence early on, again, in a really tough schedule. So same thing here. You got a tough schedule to start. Flames are in Edmonton on Sunday. Edmonton won't be very happy about their home opener. So it's a big mountain to climb. But listen, in Ottawa, even when a team is not, supposed to make the playoffs or is kind of on that bubble where Ottawa's been for a little, 2, 3 years, there's still so many intriguing storylines and reasons to be optimistic or just excited to watch the games, see how your youngsters are progressing. So that's where we're at in Calgary. Whether they make the playoffs or not doesn't mean that this team is not worth watching. It just means that you measure the team's progress in growth. And that's how That's how I think fans should look at it. How are the kids growing on the farm? How are the kids growing in junior? And how are the kids growing that just made the roster?
I guess with that, you're kind of alluding to the idea of hope with young players, and that's what, fans want, right? If it's a rudderless ship, it's no fun if you're going nowhere. And with this Flames team, it's felt like the past couple of years, and really for maybe the past 2 decades, that they've only with a couple teams that really felt like they could win the Stanley Cup, that they were kind of in that mushy middle. Right. And now there's a bit of the R word, and I don't know if I think you're allowed to say rebuild, but I don't know if Craig Conroy is. Where do you feel like this team's at in terms of that rebuild and how they're doing so far? You know, alluding to those young prospects and players that they've grabbed up in the past year or two.
Well, they'd prefer the word retool or revamp. I use the term rebuild, but often now I'm using a new term that I've come up with called the high build, the hybrid rebuild. And because they're trying to make the playoffs every year while also rebuilding, that's not generally the way all those teams like Pittsburgh, Chicago, so many winners of the past have done it. They've gone to the bottom and worked their way up with great draft picks. So I think I think Craig Conroy's done a really good job. He's just stockpiled assets, and every time you grab another draft pick, it's a lottery ticket, and you never know which one's going to cash in. And what is it? Sam Hanzek? Is it Connor Zary? Is it Zach Parekh? They're hotshot defensemen in Saginaw. Who knows where who it's going to be? But I like the what they've been doing. The direction from ownership is this: do not tear it down and go to the bottom and get the first or second or third round draft or third pick overall. Keep making the playoffs while rebuilding. And really, the only example that I can come up with of late where that's been successful is Dallas. Dallas did it. They didn't go right down to the bottom. I'd say they're a top two or three team in the league. And they were last year. I think they will be this year. And they did it on the power of one really, basically one really incredible draft, maybe two. And they really hit on all their picks. They've all been home runs. And now they're a powerhouse. So that's the model the Flames are hoping to follow.
It sounds like, you're alluding to ownership wanting to win, but you look across the league, Buffalo has been in a rebuild and where they tore down to the studs and they're struggling. Ottawa, really, maybe this year might be different because they've insulated the team with some veterans, but for years they had this young core, but they ne didn't really have players around. How much of that focus will be there for Craig Conroy to maybe try to maybe sell off players like he has done in the past, but also keep veterans there to teach and learn, or learn, be kind of a learning presence for the youngsters in Calgary.
It's funny, Alex. That's why I love talking to you because the Flames situation so well. Like you really do follow it so well, and like that's exactly what they have in Calgary. They've got six guys. They actually identify it as six leaders. They're all wearing letters, and they are the guys who are in charge of creating the culture and shaping the way the youngsters have to play to be successful down the road. And it might sound like, well, yeah, every team's got leaders, and all the leaders try to teach the youngsters. These guys see it as a source of tremendous pride, and they take it very seriously. Guys like Nazem Kadri and Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund, the captain, and Mackenzie Weegar, Rasmus Anderson. Those are the guys that we're talking about, and they really do have to set the standard, and they've been doing that. And so I know that every rebuilding team has a bit of a mix, but when I talked about that team 10 years ago with the Flames, talked to Matt Stajan and Mason Raymond, these guys who were on that team, they said same thing. We had a handful of guys like them who were in charge of teaching the youngsters that this is the way we do it, and you need self-belief and all these other things. And so that's what the Flames have, and that's now the big question is if they're not in the playoff race come trade deadline, do any of those pieces I just mentioned get put up for auction again? And that'll be a debate for another day. I really think it's too early to start asking questions. Day one of camp this year, guys were asking Rasmus Anderson, do you really want to be here? Nazem Kadri, are you sure you want to be here, part of a rebuild? Like, it's a legit question, but I didn't think we had to ask it on day one.
Yeah, it's interesting, that a player that they did bring in, that might be expendable on the at the trade deadline is someone you wrote about with Anthony Mantha, and I really like the shooting yin to complement the passing yang. I really like that part of your
Thank
story.
you.
With him, like, is that something where you expect him to be a focal point of this team moving forward, or is it maybe, buy in free agency, get a year of a guy, hopefully he plays well, and then flip the asset? Like, what do you think the calculus is for the Flames with bringing in Anthony?
I don't know. I don't think they know right now. They just wanted someone to try and kickstart Jonathan Huberdeau. And that was the only guy they went out and got and said, this guy is here 100% for Jonathan Huberdeau. He's a shooter. Huberdeau's a passer. And Huberdeau's found no chemistry with anybody since he's been here for 2 years. So if that is a really nice mix, I think the Flames almost have to sign him long term. They've got all the cap space in the world. They got $20 million in cap space. So it would be easy to sign Anthony Mantha long term. Now, I'm not sure that serves them well as part of a rebuild or a high build or whatever we want to call it. But the other option, of course, is if he's having a really good year, then you trade Anthony Mantha at the deadline. You get another. He was traded at the deadline last year, and he got a second and a fourth round pick. I think the Flames would be thrilled to get a second and a fourth round pick for Anthony Mantha at this year's deadline. So it'll be, and that will be a very interesting debate. If they're not making the playoffs, I would submit that they'll probably trade him off and get more assets.
We touched upon it a bit at the beginning, but about goaltending, right? And I wonder, right, with Wolf, like Dustin Wolf, like, do you believe where he's at right now? And he didn't start the first game, that he's a viable option to be a starting goaltender in this league, because he has dominated the AHL for really 3 years, but when he's come to the NHL, he's floundered a little bit. Where do you see Dustin Wolf's game heading into the season?
Well, he's never short on confidence. Like he really feels he can do the job, but I don't blame him. Like he's dominated the last 4 years of hockey he's played in. I think he was the MVP up until last year. He was the MVP or the top goalie in his league for 4 years in a row. And that's 2 years of junior and 2 years of AHL. So he can't, there's nothing more to accomplish in the American Hockey League. The question is, can he make the jump and be an effective NHL goalie? He's an NHL goalie. He's shown that. But he won his last four starts last year. That was a good way to kind of end the season. And I do think that, he's obviously trending in the right direction. The only question really is how much will the Flames let him take the ball and run with it? This has been a question that I don't even think the Flames have an answer. Him or Vladar? Who's going to get the most starts this year? I would submit to you that by the end of the season, assuming this team doesn't make the playoffs, they're going to have to make another tough decision on whether or not to sign Vladar. He'll be an unrestricted free agent. Sign him long term or for another year or two or whatever, or let him go. And my guess is they're going to trade him at the deadline for more assets. And they'll go with Dustin Wolf and Devin Cooley, who they signed in the offseason. Interestingly, Devin Cooley, who's their minor league goalie right now, they're very high on him. He's only played six NHL games, but he has a one-way contract next year. Now, he's only $800,000 a year or whatever it is, so it's not a big deal. But they have committed to him to be a starter net or to be a, with the big league club next year. So to me, the writing's on the wall. Vladar will be gone almost regardless of how he plays this year. So it will be Wolf's team probably by midseason on, is my guess.
Yeah, it maybe speaking of guys that could maybe be waived, or and Cooley, next year if he doesn't play pan out, or they go with Vladar's Jacob Peltier, and you wrote about spoke to him a bit before, he got waived, and then he cleared through waivers. What, like, kind of taking the bigger picture approach, what's kind of gone wrong with Peltier and his development with his time and with the Flames?
He just keeps getting injured, and he's 5 foot 9, 170 pounds, and in today's NHL, I'm just not sure. You've got to be pretty exceptional and really stand out, and that's kind of really the big thing. He just in his limited action before he keeps getting hurt, he's just not shown what they hope they'd see from him. Hey, they love his enthusiasm. He's great in the room. Everybody loves Jacob Pelche in this market, in that dressing room, in the organization. But at the end of the day, that's just not enough. You've also got to go out there and be a difference maker on the ice. And his role here will probably be a fourth line role, maybe third line. He's an energy player, but He's kind of lost his confidence because of the injuries, and he's lost his confidence a little bit because he's just not gained any traction. So their goal, they were hoping he would clear waivers. They didn't want to lose him, so they were happy about that. They want him to go down to the Wranglers, be the best player on the team, and force the team to call him up. Listen, game one, the Calgary Flames already have an injury with Kevin Rooney. I'm not sure the extent of it, but it looks to me like it's probably a concussion. So he's gone for at least a week, in my opinion. That might be the perfect chance for Jacob Pelletier to come up. I don't think they'll call him up. I think they'll use Matt Coronato and call someone else up. But the point is, opportunities often arise with injuries. So Pelletier, be ready, have a good attitude, and they're not worried about his attitude. The kid's got as good an attitude as anybody I've ever seen.
One player, who's a young player, like we alluded to it with Connor Zary with that fantastic goal. How much of, he played really well last season, especially at the tail end. I guess just heading into the season, like what kind of player do you think he can be moving forward? And do you think he can be maybe, one of the franchise pillars for this team moving forward?
I definitely think he's one of their pillars. What kind of player is he going to be like? Is he going to be a big point producer? I don't know. They still don't know if they're going to use him up the middle. He was a center in junior. They need more centermen in the organization. I think ultimately he'll be a center, as we look in our into our crystal ball. But right now they've got him in the catbird seat, like on the best line. If you're a Calgary Flame hopeful, to me, there's no better line than the one with Coleman and Backlund. And I know people who don't follow the Flames would be like, well, why? Who cares? Those guys are not big point producers. They're by far the best line the Calgary Flames have had for the last 3 years. They're the best defensive line. They go up against all the other team's best players. They have a huge responsibility. And whoever's played with those guys over the last handful of years has always elevated their game and gotten a ton of points. Andrew Mangiapane was the last guy. So he's in a great position, a real chance to really succeed. And I think he's going to have a big year this year as a second year Flame. He had a great year last year, kind of surprised a lot of people, and but he hasn't surprised himself. He knows he's got the confidence to keep going and projecting upwards.
One player that's, as you mentioned, surprised by making the team was Samuel Hanzik. Wasn't super noticeable in his first game with the Flames, but do you expect him to be up with the big club all season? Is it kind of just see how he plays? Like, where do you think the Flames and Hanzik stand heading into this season?
Yeah, I definitely don't expect him to be with the team past the 9 or 10. Like, I don't know how long he'll be here. That's up to him. Listen, the intensity gets ratcheted up from preseason to the regular season. Plus, that opening game in Vancouver was as intense a game as I've seen in a while. Like, he just kind of got left behind as a youngster in his first NHL game. I get it. It's understandable. But we'll see how he settles in for the next handful. He was their best player in the preseason, period. So that bodes well for him. I do think that he's an NHLer, and I think he'll be an NHLer for a lot of years. He's got the size, the speed, and I think he's smart enough. But the adjustment period could take a while. And in the meantime, they may say, you know what? It's probably better for you to go get as much confidence as possible in the American Hockey League. I don't know. To me, it's about a coin flip, as to whether or not he's here the whole season or if he needs a little AHL time. I don't know, but he certainly earned his spot here to start the season. He was incredible in camp, and it came a year after being absolutely invisible in camp to the point where there were people in the organization who I know are saying, we might have made a big mistake by picking this guy 16th overall. Well, they don't say that anymore. Now they're thrilled that they did.
Huh, that's interesting. I wonder how many times scouts or GMs say that about players. Because it's interesting here in Ottawa, Kaarin Yastrzemchuk didn't look that great in dev camp, and then he comes out of, guns blazing in preseason and leads the team in points, and everyone's like, oh my God, here's the next savior. And honestly, if I'm watching him at dev camp, I would have said, uh-oh,
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. But he's 18 and or he's now 19, but you just really have no idea with these players when they're so young.
100%. We saw Yastrzemchuk here in Calgary for, he was obviously a stud. And I saw some of the highlight reel goals. He's one of the highlight reel goals he scored. I think it was an overtime winner in the preseason.
Against
And
Toronto.
Hanzek in dev camp, was invisible through the first two games, but in the third game, it was like he just got it. It just clicked. And confidence, I think, has everything to do with that. So I was thrilled to see Yakupchuk, have such a great preseason. That's a great story for sure.
A lot of Sens fans here wanted them to pick Zane Parekh, and unfortunately for them, or maybe now fortunately for them, I don't know. They probably are mincing their words a little bit after preseason, but Parekh looked really good as well. I know you've talked to him a little bit. How would you say maybe he looks so far, like just having like watching him at in camp and dev camp so far the past couple months?
Yeah, Zane Parekh had a humbling camp. He in the development camp he was. Listen, I was there in Penticton when they had a development camp, and you could see right away this guy's got world-class stride. Like his skating is sublime. His ability to find, his passing is unbelievable too. But he was a fish out of water at development camp and certainly at the NHL camp. And he came in with a whole lot of piss and vinegar and confidence bordering on cockiness, which I'm not saying in a negative way. But he left here with his tail between his legs. He was quite humble and saying, like, he used the word humble, I think, five times in his exit interview. And it was good. It showed he was just being real. It was actually a beautiful kind of turnaround just to see him realize, wow, like, I got a lot of work to do and I will be back. And he knows he's an NHLer, but that was a very eye-opening experience for him. So, it'll be fascinating to see, what he does to kind of make sure that next year in camp he becomes the next Sam Hontzak and shocks everybody. Not shocks everybody, but turns it around and becomes like Carter Yakupchuk and shows, no, I need to stay in this lineup right now. So Flames have a star in Parekh, but not yet and not even close at this point in time.
I guess for you, and you talked about the likeliest scenario is that the Flames do not make the playoffs, but what would be a successful season in your mind for this team heading in the 24-25 season?
Well, there's an interest. The Calgary Flames have two first rounders in next year's draft. If the Calgary Flames finish in the bottom 10 of the NHL, they get to keep their first round pick in the bottom 10. Otherwise, if they finish 11th worst, 12th worst, then Montreal Canadiens get that first pick. Nobody wants that in Calgary, so. To me, a great season for them is to finish ninth worst in the NHL. Their youngsters really develop and show a lot. Calgary Flames make a bunch of trades at the deadline and get a whole bunch more assets, get even younger. And that's the way I think a successful season looks. Now, is that the way the general manager thinks a successful season looks? No, he wants to make the playoffs. So does the owner. So I, everybody has different ways of looking at it, but to me, you asked me, to me, that's the way it is. I don't think it serves anybody well if they finish dead last and they have a lottery pick. There are some people who want that team tank, but that's not, I don't think a culture of losing like that is good. And by the way, when I talk to people in the front office about tanking and all that, and they rail against it and say it's so bad for the culture, they often name Ottawa. They often name Buffalo. They often name Detroit and say, how many years have these teams been floundering, just, flailing away? There's no guarantee that if you tear it down, that you can bring it back in any sort of reasonable time frame. So I'm not trying to crap on Ottawa or
No.
Detroit or Buffalo, but these are organizations that have been, sinking in the mud for years. I agree, all three are on the upswing right now, no question. But they're still not at respectability quite yet until they start making the playoffs. So that I just wanted to reiterate that that's a real mindset here in Calgary. Don't let us tank like everybody, like so many other teams.
I mean, just to add that, here in Ottawa, I think there has been a culture of losing, and I think that they haven't made the playoffs the past 2 years just because they didn't know how to win, right? And they were in such bad environments, and they didn't, when adversity hit, they didn't know how to handle it. So just for Flames fans, a rebuild is great. You get great players, but it also doesn't mean that you necessarily will win. You might just have talented players that don't know how to win, and it becomes a culture. And it seems as though, at least in Ottawa this year, it might be a bit different, but who knows, right? So.
How many years have we been saying that in Ottawa? Even when they did make the playoffs, it wasn't like they were a juggernaut, right? It's so anyway, again, I'm not crapping on Ottawa. I do like their direction, but the point is nothing's guaranteed, even if you do tear it down and try to rebuild.
On a way more somber note, obviously Johnny Hockey passed away last month, and I guess I just wanted to, you wrote a really touching story about him, and you knew him pretty well from his time in Calgary, of course. I guess just I know it's been a little while, but just reflecting on everything he meant to the city and the outpouring of support, just when you think back about his time in Calgary, what do you think about?
He was so fun to watch. I mean, there aren't many players that I can even reflect back on who ever played the style that Johnny did. You know, the quick cuts and the quick cuts and the just the creativity. I mean, we talked about Jonathan Huberdeau being one of the best passers in the game, but he couldn't hold a candle to Johnny Gaudreau. So And always had a smile on his face. He was, hey, beloved. I mean, it's the most tragic story I've ever been a part of. I do think some beautiful things have come out of it. The way this city's reacted, I think, is so admirable, especially given the fact that Johnny left the city. You know, I mean, he that didn't sit well with a lot of people. So the way that people have really embraced him, listen, on Saturday for the home opener, Calgary Flames are going to mesh, the excitement and hype of opening night with a tribute to Johnny Gaudreau. That is a delicate balance that they're going to have to strike, and I think they'll nail it. The Flames are generally really, really good at their pregame ceremonies and celebrating players. So I think that'll be interesting to watch, and I know that it'll mean a lot to the people who are at the game because people in the city, like I said, they loved him, and I just think it says so much that we've all seen the videos. I was there for the tributes, but also just all the things people left at the foot of the dome. And Calgary did itself proud, and boy, Johnny's family, I know that meant the world to them. And I hope and I know that we'll see the Gaudreau family here when they're ready. I think it'll be when Columbus comes to visit in a couple months. I think that'll be a real powerful, real memorable night. And I'm not sure how the Flames are going to recognize him, if they're going to retire his number or lift his number to the rafters or his name to the rafters or just have a celebration. Whatever it is, they'll strike the right note, and people will get one more chance to kind of wrap their arms around the Gaudreaus and tell them how much their son meant to this city.
On a much more positive or kind of interesting note, as I'll segue as best as I can from that. Before the season, everyone at Sportsnet had to make predictions. Are you obligated never to pick the Oilers? Is that like in your contract? And I mean, I think you did, but
I did.
but how did that go with Flames fans? Is that it's just objective how you see it.
Listen, people in Calgary don't like to say anything nice about anything in Edmonton. And that's pretty easy because there aren't a whole lot of nice things in Edmonton. So, but hey, they were 2 goals away from winning the Stanley Cup last year. They were by far the best team in the NHL the last, what, 50 games, 40 games. They have a momentum that I think is undeniable. Listen, wasn't something like out of the 27 experts, didn't like 23 of us pick the Oilers to win? I've never seen that. I've never seen that in my career, like for the
I
whole
picked it too.
world.
Just yeah, I
Yeah,
was.
you did too. And I love Dallas. I thought they were going to win the cup last year, and they could easily win it this year. But two things. One, how many times have we seen a team win a championship a year after they just knocked on the door and fell just short? They learned so much from that devastation. Second of all, I think that they improved more than almost any team in the NHL this offseason. You know, probably top five teams in terms of what they did to get even better. So I think they're the best team last year on paper. They finished. Now they added Arvidsson. Now they added Jeff Skinner. that's incredible amount of speed and talent and goal scoring. I guess obviously there's question marks in net and on the blue line, but all I'm saying is I think they went out and did a really good job to get even better, position themselves even better. So yeah, it hurts for me to say all these nice things about the Edmonton Oilers, but it's not like I'm making this up or I'm coming out of left field. Everybody can see the talent and the opportunity that they may have in front of them.
This is a bit of a throwback, but did Jerome Iginla have one of those kind of tirades or yelling spouts in 2004 ahead of Game 7 or something like that? I'm curious if you have any insight on
No, I don't. I don't. It's funny.
that.
Jerome's around now too. Like, he's a consultant for the general manager, but he's never seen anywhere. He's all behind the scenes, and he's not even living in Calgary. He's still living in Kelowna. But I think we're going to start seeing Jerome Iginla more and more as the years progress. His son will probably be leaving Kelowna after this year. And then I think maybe you're going to see Jerome Iginla here more, so I can ask him more about those sort of questions when I see him then.
Awesome, Eric. Thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. Is there anything coming up at Sportsnet that we should kind of keep our eyes and ears open for?
Nope, just really looking forward to doing the broadcast. I love doing the intermission hits and telling stories about this team and this city and this organization. And it'll be an interesting ride this year. I don't think for As I alluded to earlier, just because the team is not expected to make the playoff doesn't mean it won't be a very fascinating, interesting year. And I think in game one, we saw an example of why I would say something like that. It was just, this team, if they really do have the mantra of never give up, that team from 10 years ago when they made the playoffs against all odds, they set a franchise record for third period comebacks. I think they had 11 third period comebacks
Wow.
that they turned into wins. They just always believed that they could score that big goal. And I'm not sure they have the firepower from back then now, but we'll see. If they can have that belief, that's half the battle.
Well, there you go. Thanks so much, Eric, for taking the time and doing this. I hope it is a fun season. Maybe a couple, you're at one third period comeback, so maybe we can make it get closer to 11. So thanks again for taking the time and doing this, and have a great season.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy our chats. Good luck. Good luck with covering your Senators, and we'll see you in Ottawa. Turns out I will be there now, so
There you go.
we'll see you
Awesome.
real soon here, my man.
Awesome. Great. And we'll be back in a couple next week. And thanks again, Eric.
Thanks, buddy.